Welcome to the Should've Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Jonathan Von Tobel of Money Moves, ESPN Las Vegas will join us. We'll go over week one of college football. And it's funny, I didn't plan this, but JVT, as some of you might know, is a big LA Clippers fan. And it's a timely appearance from JVT because the league came down on the Clippers very hard on, what was it, late Wednesday afternoon. Seemed like for a while here, there were some reports from ESPN. By the way, ESPN, had Pablo Torre, who broke this story for a while, and they no longer have him, and their reporters were completely lost, completely misinformed on this story as the Clippers lose five first-round picks. Kawhi basically gets a slap on the wrist because he said, I had no idea, didn't know. And it seemed like either maybe Kawhi flipped or the Players Association kind of turned in Kawhi and said, hey, don't go after us and we'll give you the information you need. They had the Clippers dead to rights. You know, the idea that the Clippers, they're being picked on here, or Ballmer didn't know, or even Kawhi didn't know, and that this was, they didn't do anything wrong. If you listen to more than just a couple minutes of this, it's pretty clear the Clippers, were dead to right. I'm not sure from a betting standpoint if there's any betting implication. The Clippers listed at 30 and a half wins. I would only go under there. Just because, now you're going to, with all these picks out the window and you look at, what happened. We've talked about this before. That night that Kawhi decided to join the Clippers and they trade for George and they give up all those picks. They gave up SGA, who's now, a multiple-time MVP winner. And just the swinging doors moment that become, and that's going to become, I would imagine, some sort of Netflix documentary, a 30 for 30, because that is just, an all-time moment, an all-time transaction in league history. But the Clippers now, who basically lost 10 picks and two swaps in this deal between the trade and the picks they forfeit, they're going to need to get picks back. So trading anyone that's not nailed down. I mean, the Nets did this when they traded Garnett and Pierce for Garnett and Pierce, and it blew up in their face, and they had to get assets back. They would take on bad contracts, but take draft picks along with those. Say, hey, we'll take this contract off your hands, but give us a pick. I could see the Clippers just, trading anything to get picks back, whether that's trading Garland, trading, anything they can. I'm not sure what else they have. I mean, I wouldn't imagine they're going to trade guys they just drafted, but I would only look towards under 30 and a half. But I think the league had to do this. You could say, too harsh on the Clippers, all that. Part of the reason for having consequences, it's not just to punish people that do things wrong. It's to deter people from doing it in the future. And you could use, a bunch of different examples. But if you have a curfew or something when you're younger and it's midnight and you come home at 3 a.m. and there's no punishment, well, there is no curfew. There are no rules. You can't have a league based on the salary cap and then have a team explicitly and just brazenly violate the salary cap and then not punish him. So Silver, who gets criticized all the time for not being harsh enough, I think that probably said, you guys criticized me for not being harsh. I'll show you, and I'll take away five first-round picks. Plus, Ballmer seemed like he was kind of hindering the investigation, wasn't being truthful. I think that probably annoyed Silver. Ballmer gets suspended a year, so we'll get JVT's thoughts on it. But good for the league coming down on the Clippers, and boy, the Clippers just... Yeah, I've heard people call this a death penalty. I don't know if it's a death penalty. It certainly hurts. It certainly, hinders your ability to add to your team, to add talent. But we'll see here as they lose just pick after pick after pick. I mean, you can still sign free agents, but certainly a blow and a deserved one as Kawhi gets off pretty scot-free again. $700,000. And I didn't know. I had no idea. And Kawhi, all he had to do is take a few pictures with these companies that were paying him under the table, and he reportedly got $10+ million. Talking about eight figures. The fact that he didn't know, he's getting eight figures to do nothing, and he had no idea. It's hard to believe. But NBA will actually be here too soon, I would say. It comes before you think, but NBA will be back. But I think, as we talked about, NBA's regular season is going to have a little juice this year with, LeBron and Philly and everything the Sixers did, get rid of the tanking. Maybe NBA's got a nice little bounce back year. The regular season in past years has been tough to watch at times. So we'll talk to JVT about that. But we will also talk to JVT about college football. It is officially back for sure now. I mean, I feel like we've had a few of these days where like, all right, football's back. It's week zero. Football's back. It's the Hall of Fame game or the preseason. But week one, it's underway. It's not the greatest slate. I mean, you got a bunch of games. Everyone is, you know, playing cupcakes. For years, college football would spoil us with these good slates and marquee matchups, Texas versus Ohio State. And you just go down the line, ranked team versus ranked team. It's the one weekend, if you're college football, you have it to yourself. You're not competing against the NFL. There is no NFL to go up against with people dividing their time, splitting up their weekends, saying, you know what, I can't sit on the couch for 12 hours on Saturday and Sunday. I'm going to watch one or the other. Well, this is, you've got college football. You got the audience all to yourself. Labor Day weekend, starting on Thursday all the way to Monday. All football, all the time. And the games really aren't that great. I've mentioned a few I like. Georgia, I think, lays it on Tennessee Tech. I'm okay laying the number there. Talk about Louisville taking the points against Ole Miss on Sunday night. 7. I don't know if you'll get a 7.5. 7 might be the best you get. There were some 7.5s earlier in the summer. The one I like, too, I think Michigan laying about 27 to Western Michigan. New coach. Probably want to get off to a good start. Western Michigan seems like they're going to be terrible. So I think Michigan and you can't have a bigger gap in coaching from 1 year to the next, from what they had last year in the coach, you know, basically chasing girls around all over the place, to Kyle Whittingham, who's a professional coach, buttoned up, you know, good offensive line coach. I think they absolutely maul Western Michigan. So I'm okay laying the points there. Now, I mentioned usually this week one, you see a few just monster upsets, Colorado, TCU, I mentioned the Howard UNLV game a decade or so ago where the line's 45. I mean, you'll see some crazy, crazy upsets just because it's hard to price these teams. So I don't know. Do you see one this week? Probably. I mean, probably doing the show on Monday saying, wow, this team was a 20-point dog and they won outright. That is not unusual for week one, but I mean, there's a lot of games to choose from. So picking which one is the hard part. And it's easy to say, hey, there's going to be a big upset. Okay, which one's it going to be? Maybe Nebraska as a big favorite here. Penn State over Marshall, 24-point spread. Miami plays Stanford on Friday night. Miami's a 24-point favorite. I don't think they're in real upset danger. I know they had a habit, and Cristobal's had a habit as losing games as a big favorite. But man, Stanford just all beat up on the offensive line. I'm not sure how much Stanford's going to be able to move the ball. And I think Miami is going to be really, really good. But boy, the games, you just look at the games. These are not the best games. Again, it's great to have it back and all that, but man, you would figure they would have come forward with a better schedule here. And you get some games on Friday night, starting San Jose State and Eastern Michigan laying 3, Georgia State and North Carolina A&T, who cares? Purdue laying 35.5 to Indiana State, Michigan State now up to a 10-point favorite over Toledo, Oklahoma laying 40.5 to UTEP, Kansas laying 42 to LIU, I mentioned Miami Stanford, and you have Fresno State and USC laying 22.5. And then the games on Saturday, just the ranked teams, Bama, 4-touchdown favorite over East Carolina. Houston, a 3-touchdown favorite over Oregon. Indiana's going to beat North Texas by a billion points. But it's not great. It really isn't. It's not great. But it's football. It's back. Oregon, 24.5 over Boise State. Texas and Texas State. I mean, this is a rough, rough slate. So we'll still be watching, though. But it's not like, it's not that appointment viewing where, last year, all right, I got to watch Texas, Ohio State, even if it's only week one. That's a game you have to watch. You don't feel like there's a lot of these games you have to watch here this weekend. The games on Sunday are good. I don't know. I mentioned this the other day. I don't know why. You got 3 games on Sunday. One of them is Washington State at 4:00 Eastern. Okay. Washington laying 24. The other two are played at the same time, Ole Miss and Louisville and Wisconsin and Notre Dame, and that game's at Lambeau. Why have them head-to-head? Why couldn't you spread that out more? I don't really get that, but we'll see here. UCLA, Cal. The Cal quarterback's a good player. UCLA's got Chesney from James Madison, so that program looks like probably headed in the right direction. Cal, I know a lot of people think that kid could be the number one pick in the draft when he comes out. I think probably a year and a half from now. So that's a fun game late at night. That might be as fun a game as any here. Week one, UCLA laying 1.5 to Cal, total 53.5. And what is, for years a Pac-12 game, but UCLA Big Ten and Cal now ACC. So a Big Ten ACC clash between UCLA and Cal. I think that sums up the state of college football pretty perfectly. So we'll see what JVT thinks about these games and more. And again, Monday you got SMU laying 3 against Florida State. I mean, that's another game to show you how much college football has changed. I mean, to think SMU is going to go into Tallahassee and be a road favorite and laying a field goal and some 3.5s popping up. Florida State looked awful in week one. I don't think that's the wrong number. It's hard to lay more than a field goal, but it's also hard to back Florida State. They just might not be a good football team. Next week, the games are good. Next week, you got some better games here, including Ohio State, Texas, Oklahoma, Michigan. Michigan catching a point and a half at home. That should be a fun game there. Total's pretty low, which I'd imagine 46 and a half. Here, a lot of defense, a lot of running ball. Arizona, BYU next week. So it's the games will get better, but boy, this week is not pretty with some of these matchups. But we'll have bets. JVT will have bets. He is next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. You can catch him. Money Moves, where he had his partner on last week, Stormy Bonatoni, ESPN Las Vegas, Pod to the Future. The list goes on and on. It is Jonathan Von Tobel. JVT, it's football season. We'll get to some NFL, some college, but the timing of this worked out pretty funny because, as people may know, you are a Clippers fan, and the Clippers have been in the news. What's up, man? Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me as usual. Clippers and Angels, right? Like, this is my week. Nobody ever talks about my teams, and now all of a sudden, the last 3 days, everybody wants to talk to me and find out what's going on.
It's the line in the wire when, are you a wire guy or no?
I've watched a few episodes, but I've not seen it. I did enjoy what I watched, though.
I think it's the bartender who's supposed to be clean and starts selling stuff on the side. And the lawyer says, you wanted to be in the game. You're in the game. Your Clippers, you wanted them in the news. Here they are. They're in the news. Look, I had no problem with it. I haven't heard your take on it yet. I got no problem with it. You can't have a league where the salary cap is so prevalent and then you have teams blatantly breaking it. It's, you know, it's part of having consequences. It's not just punishing wrongdoing. It's deterring future behavior. And the league kind of crumbles. If you're just going to allow this, which, you know, Silver didn't, so give him credit, it's, you know, you're going to have chaos. So I had no problem with it. You could say it's a little harsh, but I didn't think so. You could say Kawhi got off a little bit, which, you know, there's probably some validity there. But what was your take overall in terms of the punishment and how this was handled?
Yeah, I also think that this is kind of like a Adam Silver getting tired of the Clippers. Because let's be honest, the Clippers have kind of been in the muck a couple of times now. Going back to the DeAndre Jordan and the contract thing, like everything that they have kind of pulled off in recent years, the Clippers have always been kind of skirting the rules a bit in the hopes of winning. As I texted Kelly Bidlin and Zach Cohen yesterday, win at all costs. I don't know what we've won, but they have done it at all costs. So I think Adam Silver just kind of got sick of this team kind of putting a middle finger in his face and doing what they could to circumvent some of the rules. And I think this is kind of like a strike three for the most part. So remember 2015, they were violated, fined $250,000 for violating the rules against offering unauthorized business or investment opportunities. That was the DeAndre Jordan thing. There's been multiple stuff here. So I think this is part of that. If this was the first time the Clippers had like a dalliance with some rules infringements, then maybe it's a little bit lighter. But I think this is an amalgamation of everything that the Clippers have done up to this point and not really gotten in trouble for. So look, I think a lot of people are kind of freaking out a bit too much. You know, I saw a lot of like, oh man, this Clippers team, they're cooked. They're like, why would they do this to the fans? Ballmer should be forced to sell the team. Look, they still have Kawhi Leonard, who's an asset. That trade's still going to go through. They're still going to be able to recoup some assets. And I think in the long run, it's going to damage them quite a bit. But I can't really argue too much about all of this, just considering this is the league's prerogative if they want to do this to them. I don't know if they found like insanely hard evidence, but I'm going to be curious because I'm going to read the full report today. I don't know if you've had a chance to read it, but the investigation, like the third party, they released the full report. So I can't wait to kind of dive into that and see exactly what they found. But either way, did you see Kawhi's statement, by the way, yesterday?
I did. I did.
What an incredible statement. For your audience that did not see this, I'll read this quote, which is my favorite. Integrity and respect for the game are fundamental to who I am. I accept full responsibility for lapses in judgment by people within my inner circle.
Yeah.
What a guy.
Man. Yes. Yeah, that's and the jokes were going around too. That drafting that letter, that statement was more work than he did for any of these, you know, endorsement companies. And if he had just done a few like endorsement deals, you could say, you know what,
tree, Will, like,
take a picture with a tree, tweet out something, they're paying. I mean, it sounds like they pay him, you know, eight figures worth of money. And how does he not know, hey, I'm getting all this money for free? It's somebody else's fault. Just hard to believe.
Maybe that's the lapses in judgment he's talking about by his inner circle. Nobody told him to take the picture with the tree. Yes. And he's like, we could have gotten away with this if these guys would have just told me to do something.
Did you think they should have come down on Kawhi more?
You know, I was surprised about that. And I think that, you know, it's funny, in a single instance in which Adam Silver finally shows some balls, he also shows why people criticize him. because to let Kawhi essentially skate, I mean, he really had nothing. That is somewhat troublesome because at the end of the day, I guess the infraction is upon the team and the owner, right? They're the ones circumventing the rules. Kawhi Leonard is the one accepting and benefiting from the infraction of the rules. And I am somewhat surprised that they didn't do a little bit more with him. And so, again, I think in one single moment, you're kind of seeing Silver's ability to be soft on players while also finally maybe for the first time kind of putting his onions on the table and being like, all right, like I'm tired of this. I'm finally going to let this, you know, I'm going to pull out the ghost of David Stern really quickly and be, you know, a hard ass for just a moment. I am somewhat surprised that that is the case, but that's what this is. And I also think, too, part of the logic I would assume from Silver is, because remember, Toronto does want this trade, I would assume, still. And so if he is damaged goods, Kawhi, in the sense of he's got like a 20-game suspension or something like that, there's a chance that trade doesn't go through. There's a chance then that an Eastern Conference, which looks like it's going to be wildly entertaining if Kawhi joins the party, all of a sudden becomes a little less entertaining for your impending regular season, which you have said, right? We've talked about this. People like you are more excited than ever, it seems, for this regular season. Why put any damage to that? And I think that's probably part of the logic as well. If he is on his way, he does not want to. Silver, make sure that that trade falls through for any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, Clippers right now 30.5 for a season win total, and I think they're more incentivized now for this trade to go through, even the Clippers side of it, because you want as many picks as possible. You know, the path to a title, you're a long way from that discussion. And I don't know, would you bet either way here, over under 30.5? And I guess going forward, remember when the Nets traded Garnett and Pearson, it eventually blew up in their face? They did the smart thing and they said, you know what, we're in jail. We got to rebuild from scratch. We're going to take anybody's bad contract, just send them to us, but give us a pick. And attach a pick to it, and we can kind of get out of jail that way. Do you expect the Clippers kind of do the same thing, or just how do you rebuild this if you're the Clippers? And again, is there a betting implication here?
Yeah, I think first off, to answer your question, yes. I mean, that's how you have to do it, right? Because the 5 first-round picks are their first-round picks. So, you know, you give away those first-round picks, you can recoup some of the benefits by trading Kawhi, by taking on bad contracts, by acclimating picks that way. So I think that's probably a smart way to do this. And keep in mind, you know, this is a pretty, like, we can mock my team all we want. They're a pretty solid front office. Like, they've done a really good job of rebuilding on the fly. They raked the Indiana Pacers over the coals with the trade to Ivica Zubac and what they got back for that. They've done a good job overall with this team and with this roster. So I trust that they're going to be able to navigate their way out of this. And I think that's the way that you're going to do it. Look, from a betting standpoint, I just, you know, maybe you're going to look under. I mean, does a guy like Darius Garland's a really good example, right? Garland gets acquired this last year. He's a younger guy that wants to compete for a title. Does Garland behind the scenes go, dude, I don't want to be here. Like, what are we talking about? Like, we're going to be in purgatory for forever. Get me out of here at the trade deadline, especially if we're losing games. And all of a sudden, a Garland gets flipped, and you're looking at this team potentially being a sub-30 win team because they start to fire off pieces in the hopes of acquiring some more assets. So I think that might be the betting implication. The tricky part is obviously, when you don't hold first-round picks, what's the benefit if you're the Clippers of shipping off guys, tanking, and losing games when you're not going to fully benefit from falling in the draft lottery? So that, I think, is a delicate balance. But I do think there's a chance that a team that looked like they were going to pull the trigger on being a somewhat young group all of a sudden now might really steer into that, chip off guys like Garland and really steer into it and try to get some assets back.
All right, college football. By the time people listen to this, we're officially underway, officially. I feel like we've had 4 or 5 of these. You probably relate to this doing content where football is back. And some people, you know, it's different versions of it. Some people, it's the Hall of Fame game. Some people, it's like that first night of preseason where you get multiple games. Some people, it's week 0. But and some people, it's, you know, not till the regular season, the NFL starts. But Friday, we get a bunch of games. San Jose State, Eastern Michigan, Indiana State, Purdue, Toledo, Michigan State, UTEP, Oklahoma, Miami and Stanford, and USC, Fresno State. The card in general, just a lot of big spreads, some ugly games in terms of that. But anything you like on Friday in these games?
All of them, like, I think they're laying, 24 or more or something like that outside of the San Jose State, Eastern Michigan game. It's like, it's pretty ugly in terms of the point spreads. By the way, for me, football season starts when the media days start. I said that this summer. I was like, nope, football's here. Like, it's a downhill slope from all the way these media days. And sure enough, we got here quickly. I think the only one that I think is somewhat tempting is San Jose State and Eastern Michigan. Spartans are catching 3. You know, you go back and you look, and a lot of the damage San Jose State did against USC was in garbage time, right? They scored 24 or whatever points it was in the fourth quarter. But if you look at the overall profile for Weaver, their quarterback, the kid that transferred from Hawaii, for those who don't know, made a couple of starts for the Rainbow Warriors last year, did pretty good when Mike Alahado couldn't play. He actually played pretty well. Like, PFF gave him a grade of over 80 in terms of his passing grade. He didn't put the ball in danger, didn't throw a single interceptable pass, completed a pretty decent amount of his passes on an average depth of target of double-digit yards downfield. And for those who don't remember what this is, this Spartan offense, Ken Niumatalolo's there, but they run this spread and shred offense. It's a really spread-out type version. They're slinging the ball around a ton. And you go back to that Eastern Michigan performance, because I had Sac State against Eastern Michigan the first time around, and catching 10, they end up losing by 11, so they don't cover the number. But I don't think you really like loved what you saw from Eastern Michigan in that first matchup, and I wonder if that is going to be something where you can stay inside of this number if you're San Jose State. Both of the running backs for Eastern Michigan were fine, but Amarian Blue ran for 55 yards at 4.6 yards per carry. The Bennett kid ran for 3.9 yards per carry. They weren't particularly efficient in terms of the yards per play. On third downs, they weren't great at all. They were 5 of 15. And I do think that against a more competent, well-coached team, Niumatalolo does a good job, that I think San Jose State's going to put forth a pretty good fight. And I keep invoking with the Spartans, go back to Niumatalolo's first year, I didn't think they were going to be very good. They had a mass exodus of talent. They were awful, like on paper. And Niumatalolo brought in this new offense, and all of a sudden they were spreading and shredding. They won 7 games and they were pretty good. And I have a feeling that they might be pretty similar here this year, where they've got nothing. No wide receiver to speak of, a quarterback they didn't really know that much of. And then they show a little bit of pluck against USC third stringers. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe Niumatalolo again is going to pull this off. So at the very least, against an opponent like Eastern Michigan coming off a win against Sac State, lean a little bit towards San Jose State. And I might pull the trigger if that gets like 3.5, if it gets back, because it got bet down, then I'll for sure be in on San Jose State.
Yeah, I know. Saw some of those contests for people that are in the college football contest. There are 3.5s out there for contest purposes. I know. Ooh, some nice. Of these contests, yeah, don't like pushes, so sometimes you get that extra half a point for that reason. Anything else on this Friday card? Miami, Stanford. I mean, Stanford's all beat up on the offensive line. I'm not sure how well they're going to move the ball. That is a hell of a number to lay on the road. Cristobal, historically, you know, not great as a favorite. I don't know. Anything else? You tell me.
I think there's on Friday for sure. I think there's like 2 games that were somewhat interesting to me, but I don't know if I'm going to really want to do it. I think you mentioned one of them, Miami and Stanford. I kind of have a feeling that Miami's actually going to go out there and be able to beat the pants off Stanford. It's funny, like, what we think about these teams. I listen to like national pundits to an extent, and I'm listening to Cover 3, and it was I really liked that podcast, but I can't remember which one of them was like, you know, Stanford looked pretty solid in week 0. I'm like, it was Hawaii. I understand that, but I don't know if we're using that to translate whether or not we like them against Miami. And you hit on a key point for me, is Miami generally in these spots has not done particularly well. I invoked a Stormy. Remember 2 years ago when they went out to Cal and they were like, let's just roll out here and get this done against Cal. And all of a sudden they were in a 39-38 shootout and they just didn't, like, they won the game, but it was not what they expected at all. And the whole point you're being is that I think Cristobal is going to have them pretty prepared and kind of understand that we have generally not done very well in these spots. 24.5 is pretty strong. If it gets back underneath 24, I think that's worth playing, but nothing really crazy. And then the other game on Friday that I thought was just worth mentioning, Stormy did play the over for USC Fresno State. I think that makes some sense here when you're looking at the way USC plays. I think maybe going with the USC team total over makes some sense as well if you wanted to go in that direction, or a first half team total, which a little bit more, right? Just get those first stringers out there against Fresno State, because we know what happens in that fourth quarter, but nothing good enough to play. But Miami Stanford, I don't think it's going to get back there, but if you get under 20, then I'll be there for Miami.
How about the 2 big games, Louisville, Ole Miss, Clemson, LSU?
So Louisville, Ole Miss, this is just based on preseason stuff, obviously. I'm not really big on like the knowledge of Louisville's roster for the most part. Having said that, I did write the SEC preview. I'm not as high on Ole Miss as many others are. I would be very tempted to get 7.5 with Louisville if that's going to pop up here. I think that's a really big loss when you're talking about your play caller and head coach and Lane Kiffin and Bobby, Charlie West Jr., heading off to LSU. I think obviously you're busting in a new offense here, so that's always tough. We saw it week 0, Will, like a lot of these teams, you get off to rough starts on offense. It's easy to practice against yourself all the time, but then all of a sudden in live fire, when you're talking about a team game planning against you, it gets a little bit different. And so I could see a scenario in which Ole Miss and Trinidad Chambliss are just kind of off to a little bit of a constipated start on offense. Remember, they lost a lot of talent too, man. Like Lane Kiffin kind of raked them over the coals too when you're talking about bringing in some of the dudes that played for them last year over to LSU, including their best defensive lineman and some other pieces on that defense. I could see a scenario in which we come into the season where many people expect Trinidad Chambliss to be a Heisman contender, where people are really, really high on Ole Miss after making a run of being a drive away from a national championship game. that were a little overvalued on the Ole Miss side. And so if I'm going to get that full touchdown plus the hook for sure, I think Louisville is going to be the side. And I didn't have much with Clemson LSU. I'll just say that it seems like a lot. You know, you got a quarterback coming off a Liz Frank injury who wasn't there for spring. You can't install your full offense if you're LSU. You're going to be off to, or you're going to be taking on this Clemson team that I think maybe is flying under the radar a bit, although Dabo was kind of a pissy little baby in the press conference the other day about his status. But I do think that, like, at some point, man, that's a lot for a Clemson team that's at least still somewhat respectable. We're really buying into this LSU thing from a market standpoint, it seems.
Yeah, and I'm sure Clemson, a program that's not used to being a double-digit underdog, I'm sure Dabo can kind of feed that to his team. You know, nobody believes in us, that kind of thing. Anything else on this week one card interest you?
Yeah, okay. So I feel proud of some of these. I don't feel proud of some of the others. We'll go the stupid play first. Iowa takes on Northern Illinois. I think Northern Illinois is going to stink. For those who don't know, NIU is now in the Mountain West, first off. But second, in February, their head coach, who was the architect of the upset of Notre Dame those years ago, decided, you know what, I'm going to go be a running back coach in the NFL for the Seattle Seahawks. And so they have an interim coach now who has a roster that everybody left. And so it's really rebuilt with like JUCOs and FCS transfers. I think it's going to be the worst offense in the Mountain West. So now you got to go on the road to take on Iowa. We know how competent Iowa is. We know how good defensively they are, how sound they are. So I played a Northern Illinois first half team total under 2.5 at +105. I think that when you're talking about engaging starters against starters, this is such a chasm of talent that this NIU team is not going to have the opportunities to score at all in this first half. I'm going to eliminate some of the noise of some of the backups getting in there for the entire game. I also think the way Iowa plays, we're talking about elongated drives, lack of explosivity. You're not going to get many bites at the apple, I think, if you're NIU. So playing that first half team total under 2.5, expecting them to just essentially get shut out in that first half, I thought was a really solid play. So I've got that. This is a little bit wrong because I think the market's up to 11 now. I took 10.5 with Central Michigan against New Mexico. You know, I think if you look at the way New Mexico is coming into this, first off, Jack Lane, starting quarterback from last year, out. I don't think that's that big of a deal because I think they've got some pretty talented quarterbacks on this roster. And he wasn't exactly like the best, right? I think it was like a 13-10 touchdown interception ratio, somewhere in that range, like barely 7 yards per attempt. He was fine, right? He managed the game. But I think when you look at the way that Central Michigan plays, they've got this offense. It's got some principles of what Army runs on offense. They're going to have long possessions. They're going to command time of possession. They're going to be able to run the ball against a defense that I think is fine, but not particularly great. Had their own issues defensively in terms of injuries throughout spring as well, and in terms of in fall camp. I just think that we're a little too much here on New Mexico. They were not a good team, Will, last year in the role of favorite. They closed as a favorite 6 times. They went 3-3 straight up, and they only covered one of those games. I think that this is one where New Mexico might be good, and they might be the favorite to win the Mountain West. We'll find out. But 10.5 against a competent Central Michigan team, I think, is a little too much. And again, I mentioned it's up to 11 there. And then what else did I have? Oh, last one. Actually, a couple here. But really quickly, I do have Hawaii catching 3 against UNLV. Starting center for UNLV might be out, is more than likely going to be out. He got rolled up on at the end of that Memphis game. I never saw, like, here's the thing, and this is why I always wonder about market moves and what some of these bettors see. You watch those games over the weekend, right, in week zero. Did you see anything from UNLV that would make you think, you know what, from 1.5 to 3 on the road in a rivalry spot in a conference game? Like, I don't think that that's the case. That's where the market went. So I'll take 3 with Hawaii. UNLV's defense is also kind of stinky. They've got some issues. They've got a corner spot that's not very good, who gave up a ton of explosive plays. Actually got lucky against Memphis. He gave up one, but it was underthrown, so he got to come back and force an incompletion. But I think Hawaii catching 3 is live there at home. And a little piece of cow at home money line against UCLA. I know I was rambling.
We always see week one, not always, but very often week one, the monster upset, not just like, oh, 4 or 5 or 10, you know, touchdown. Like you see like 3-4 touchdown underdogs win this week just because it's very hard to price this stuff. I mean, we can talk about these teams all we want. We don't really know anyone, you know, I'm just looking at some of them. Nebraska versus Ohio, Penn State versus Marshall, which is a game I've heard a lot of people talk about. Yep. I don't know, Oregon State, Houston. Is there one where you see like a huge spread where you say, you know what, maybe this team has a shot to pull it off outright?
Yeah, I think you hit on a couple of them. I mean, I feel like it might be one of those where it's like a big spread in the matchup you might not be expecting for the most part. I was trying to look like, you know, like a like, does Rhode Island Temple count, right? Like, Temple's like a 14.5 point favorite. Like, will we see that? But amongst, like, the real big boys that you're looking at here, I think Ohio and Nebraska is going to be pretty interesting, and we're going to talk about this game today. And obviously, there's a UNLV tie. But Anthony Calandria wins the job for Nebraska. I don't know if Calandria is, like, perfect for that offense and for a Big Ten setting. For those who watched him last year, and again, he's playing, you know, he's playing indoors at UNLV. It's a lot of, like, running backwards and extended plays with his legs and kind of playing off script, like, diet Patrick Mahomes type stuff in college. And I don't know if that translates to what Nebraska wants to do. And I feel like that puts you in danger a lot if he's going to put the ball in danger. He eats sacks a ton. He takes a ton of sacks. And so in your first game, in this offense, you could see a scenario in which the offense gets off to like a really poor start. All of a sudden, you find yourself in a dogfight with a team that you should not be, and that goes particularly poorly. So I think that might be one that we're looking at least going late into the window in the morning games and going like, oh man, like this is a lot closer for Nebraska than you initially expected. And maybe that upset happens. And Penn State, too, I think you're right on in the sense that Marshall seems like a competent group, and I don't know, man. I'll see it when I believe it. Like, I believed in Rocco Becht and Iowa State a while ago, and, like, it just hasn't really been great. And now all of them just have Penn State uniforms on, and I just don't know if that's going to translate. And we have seen Iowa State under Campbell in some of these games where you're watching them going, dude, what's going on with the offense? This looks awful. And why are you in some of these dogfights? So I think Penn State's a pretty good grab there, too.
Yeah. Oh, you mean Marshall's a good grab?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you and I were on the air for Colorado TCU, which was I think like a 3-touchdown spread.
Yep.
And what's that, 3 years ago now? Hard to believe that's
Deion's debut, right?
Deion's debut. And that line just never, you know, that line just kept assuming TCU was going to pull away. That was a TCU team coming off a national title berth, and boy, they've gone certainly downhill from there. So you see some crazy stuff in week one. And NFL, anything from the preseason change your opinion on any of these teams?
Not really, but I did have a couple of week one bets that I already made most part, if you want them. Let's see. So I did bet the Texans against Buffalo. This one's pretty easy. Like, I think they're going to go off as a favorite. I think they deserve to be favored. I don't know where you stand on Buffalo, but I don't understand the market's overt respect for this Bills team. Like, they're kind of the same group they were last year. The Texans, I think they fixed some of the issues on offense with the retooling of the offensive line. A lot. I was coming out of that loss for the Texans in the postseason, I was really like of the crowd of like, man, CJ Stroud kind of stinks. And then you like let it settle down and you really look at it and you're like, nah, this offensive line did him no favors. It was awful. I think he's going to be fine if they fix that. And I think they kind of did. And I think this group's going to be really, really good. They deserve to be favored at home. And by the way, that's a really good teaser leg too, because right now they're catching 1.5. So you tease Houston up, like you tease Jacksonville down, for example, or tease the Jets up, right? I think that those are really good opportunities. But I think the Texans catching 1.5, one. I think they're going to go off as the favorite there. I think you and I have talked about this, took 10.5 with Arizona against Los Angeles Chargers. That's starting to come off of that 10 now. I think that's going to be under 10 by the time we get to week one. I think that this Cardinals team is not being respected enough with the skill position talent they have. And then I put in that Texans-Jags teaser. I'll add a Texans-Jets teaser. And I got to tell you, I'm kind of interested in taking 3.5 with the Miami Dolphins. I have not heard good things about this Raiders group out here. And Adam Hill of the Las Vegas Review-Journal, who covers them, is a buddy of mine. He was on with us doing local radio, and as he said, he's like, I think that this coaching staff is surprised by how bad this team is. And I don't think this group is good at all. And I think a lot of people are going to be surprised. They're going to be a top three survivor team in week one, probably three. But still, I think a lot of people are going to have the surrender cobra up watching this Raiders team down like 14-10 in the fourth quarter going, holy smokes, what did I just ask this group to do? Week one of Survivor. I don't think they're particularly good.
Where are you going with Survivor? Let's just say you only had one, because I know people, ask some people, but hey, what do you like in Survivor? And go, well, and they start giving, you know, five different teams, which, sure. I mean, it is tough. You know, if you're going to only win with one, better off buying a lottery ticket, but people like to live the dream. What is your Survivor strategy in general, though?
It's hard, man, because I think Stormy and I, because we have an entry together, I think we're probably going to use Jacksonville, more than likely. That seems like one of the easier ones. I think it's probably going to be top two. I don't think it's going to be two. I think it's going to be two, because I think a lot of people are going to just take the free space, if you will, with the Chargers that they assume that's going to be. But I think that seems the safest play. One that I think is interesting, that if you wanted to flirt a little bit with it, just because you want to save some of the big boys, I hate even saying this, is Pittsburgh at home against Atlanta?
Oof.
You know, like everything seems so bad for Atlanta. And if it's Penix that's going to start, you're talking about a dude that just started 11-on-11s, like what, at the end of August, that's getting the start there. I don't know how that looks. I'm not a big Pittsburgh fan, but I can see a scenario in which they get that, but that's going to be absolutely disgusting having to sweat that thing out. But I think those are the ones, like, I'll tell you this too. I wouldn't be surprised. You talked about the week one upsets. I wouldn't be surprised if we get a scenario like, I don't trust Detroit as 7-point favorites against New Orleans. I think the Saints are a pretty good option in millions as well if you're going to get seven, especially with the issues along the offensive line. That could be a team as a 7-point favorite that gets upended pretty quickly. Week one's a lot trickier, I think, than it looks on the surface, but I think those are the best options. We're going to use Jacksonville, but I think that you can flirt with Pittsburgh as well.
All right, man. Looking forward to it. Football is, according to you, football's been back for like 2 months now.
That's right.
Football is back-ish for sure. Appreciate you coming on, man. This was fun. Where can we find you?
At me, JVT, up on social media, and ESPN Vegas, as you said. Let's see. Money Moves 11-1 Pacific. 11-1 Pacific, up on VSIN. And yeah, that's pretty much it. By the way, go Angels. Let's go. Stan Kroenke, baby.
What? So this is big for your Angels, right? I should give you a chance. You're excited?
Oh, come on now. Artie's gone. I don't know what Kroenke's going to do. I have an idea of what Kroenke's going to do. But Artie Moreno is one of the worst owners in sports, not even just baseball. He's one of the worst owners in sports. So to get somebody who's going to invest, the sneaky part about this is he bought the land. So he's got 150 acres plus he bought the 150 acres and the ballpark. So what's clearly going to happen is he is going to renovate the entire area. He's going to rebuild the ballpark and he's going to invest in this. Cause I don't know if you've been out there have you been to the Angels ballpark?
No.
So the last time I went, it's been a while, but it's like a super corporate area. Like a lot of office buildings around it. There's like a bar, but there's not really much to do in the area. So I think he's really going to like kind of just raise the whole place and then rebuild it as kind of like a little bit downtownish like spot to go. And then, of course, he gets to recoup the benefits of all of the events that are going to be out there because he's going to privately fund it like he did at SoFi. So I'm excited, man. Should be good. I just want a competent team. As I said 1,000 times, I said it to Jensen. I said it on I don't need a World Series in like 2028. But like it's September and you said like baseball goes to the wayside. For me, I don't want it to. Like I want to watch some of these series and care and not just watch like George Clausen and Walbert Urania make starts every once in a while and go, ah, cool. I can't wait to see that guy in like a Yankee uniform in 2 years. You know, like I want to be able to be excited about baseball at this time of the year.
I'm happy for you. Just don't bring back those damn rally monkeys, man. That team used to terrorize the Yankees in the early 2000s. They were the kryptonite. They run the bases. Little Chone Figgins was a pain in the ass. That team, Percival at the end of the games, that team, yep. K-Rod, they would give the Yankees a very hard time.
The highest point outside of the World Series, and that was like at the start of my baseball fandom, for me, was 2009. Yeah, Yankees, Angels, ALCS. Like, I thought they were going to be able to pull that off, and they ultimately did not. But yeah, dude, it's been tough times. Tough times.
Was that game one or game two? A-Rod hit the home run the ninth to tie it. Saturday night.
Yeah, I thought it was
off
game
Brian
two.
Brian Fuentes, yep. little lefty submarine closer. A-Rod had a monster postseason. All those, not narratives, because it was true he didn't play well in the postseason, but all that died that year because he dominated the playoffs. Set the
RBI
record.
Yeah, I think it was
record.
Game two because they lost that 4-3. Man, that sucked.
Yeah.
What a time.
All right, JVT. Appreciate it.
And then we took
man.
Hideki Matsui. That was great. And then next year, he didn't really do that much.
that you did. All right, man. Appreciate it. Good catching up. Thanks.
See you, dude.
See ya. All right. Thank you to Jonathan Von Tobel. Rate, review, subscribe. Enjoy the weekend. We'll be back Monday. See you then.